You're listening to KCBS In-Depth.
Really, in order to find quality care, you often have to be on a wait list that's months long.
The people, places, and issues the Bay Area is talking about.
The aggressive advocates who were looking to overrule Roe for so long, they really had no idea of the consequences they might be opening up.
In this case, there very well may be charges that are appropriate. For example, trying to obstruct an official proceeding of Congress, right? That is unlawful.
This is KCBS In-Depth.
Welcome to KCBS In-Depth, broadcasting throughout the Bay Area and streaming on the Odyssey app. I'm Mary Hughes. This week's In-Depth is a continuation of Odyssey's I'm Listening program, which works to inspire more conversations about mental health. This time, the conversation is centered on veterans and mental well-being. Odyssey's David O'Leary will start things off with Brigadier General Jack Hammond, who is speaking on behalf of the Home Base program, a national nonprofit focused on healing the trauma that war veterans face.
Hey, how we talk about suicide and mental health, that has changed a little bit in recent years. There's still a ways to go, but we're more fluent in the conversation to talk about these things, to be able to identify problems. Do you see that in your line of work in terms of our veterans?
I think we see it not only with our veterans, and it's funny because a lot of times the military leads medicine in certain directions based out of necessity and innovation, et cetera. And it's happened throughout our history. And when you think of things like penicillin, x-rays, and all these things that came about as a result of World War I and so forth. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately for these wars, these most recent wars, the mental health and brain injury aspect has been brought to the forefront for some pretty rough reasons. I mean, we've lost 150,000 veterans to suicide since 9/11. We've had 500,000 veterans with traumatic brain injuries, which we know oftentimes will then lead to suicidal ideations based upon some of the issues they're feeling. And so the Army and the DOD have taken this quite seriously because, you know, when you lose 20 to 30 to 40 people a day to suicide on a national basis, that's a red flag.
Yeah, that will turn some heads. And these risk factors, I guess, were always out there for our veterans coming back from service and, you know, in combat. It's just now that we're more aware of them and maybe now acknowledging them a little bit more freely and openly in the last, you know, couple of years.
I think so. I mean, you know, people have been traumatized since, you know, people fighting with axes and shields, right? I mean, it's pretty horrific stuff. And people have been getting blown up since people invented gunpowder. And I think the reality is, on the suicide part of it, it was such a taboo in so many religions, first of all, that even if it happened, people kept it hushed up.
Kept the lid on it, sure.
And I'm sure, you know, a lot of well-intentioned police officers and firemen that responded to scenes where somebody may have taken their life, rather than put the family through the challenges of dealing with that, and, you know, you look at insurance and other reasons, you know, they'll come up with another euphemism for it.
Yeah.
Died suddenly. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And so I think we've kind of normalized the injury a bit, certainly within the military, and I think that's helped with the general population because when you have these conversations about suicide very publicly and the debates about the care and the need for care, you start realizing, number one, you need to do something about it. But I think the underlying issue that we're dealing with is mental health care is the worst reimbursed area of medicine.
Ah.
And so we've got the least alternatives to deal with something, arguably, that's a life-threatening injury, right? I mean, if all these people are taking their lives without adequate care, that's a life-threatening situation.
The access to care piece, even finding clinicians and caregivers, even if you have insurance, even if you have resources, can be a real challenge. And I think that's something people have become aware of in the last couple of years, as we're all much more keenly aware of our mental health and anxiety and, you know, all these other things. And trying to get care is a real struggle sometimes.
It's a huge struggle. And the other part is, you know, as you pointed out, it's not covered. So there's a barrier to care. I mean, if you've got $500 an hour, you'll probably be able to find the right person. But the reality is most of them are generalists, and that's by design. And it's one of the few areas of medicine, right, that's allowed to take place. It's almost like, you know, back in the 1930s where all you really had to go see was your general practitioner, and they pretty much did everything.
Right.
But that's where it is with mental health.
Yeah.
And so if you're a licensed social worker, psychologist, or psychiatrist, you have met the requirements to treat literally anything, even though you don't have the proper tools. And this is no disparaging comments towards them. They're doing the best they can, and thank God we have them.
Right.
It's just you wouldn't go see a pediatrician if you had stage 3 colon cancer.
Right.
And the complicated nature of the trauma that so many people are facing, whether in the military or out, you need someone that's trained and certified just as you would be in cancer care or cardiac care. You deserve to be cared for somebody that's equipped to deal with the complexities of the issues you have. And frankly, we just don't see it. And the end result is an absence of the appropriate care leading to an increase in suicide.
Boy, that's really well put. I mean, for all the talk that we have about normalizing this conversation around mental health and talking about mental health the way we talk about our physical health, it's all well and good, but the treatment of mental health is very different than the treatment of physical health. And if we don't have the caregivers, we're kind of back where we started.
And if you look on the heels of that, right, one of the byproducts of mental health challenges is substance use.
Yeah, there's a lot of shared real estate.
And we see that, and probably 60% of the folks that we care for have some level of some sub, you know, whether it's, you know, it's a lot more often than not, it's self-indulgence and, you know, self-medicating with alcohol or sometimes prescription drugs or worse when it gets into the illegal drugs.
Mm-hmm.
But oftentimes those lead to those self-harm suicides.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you a little bit about the elevated risk among our veterans, because there is more to it than just, you know, being, you know, close to munitions and things like that in the service itself in general and sometimes the culture. I think you and I have spoken before about the culture that can tend to lead to that, get back out there and do your job, and we're not going to talk about this. I know that's changing, but can you talk a little bit about why those who serve may be at elevated risk?
Yeah, well, I think there's a few reasons. Number one, you know, elevated exposures, right? You've got folks, we deal very closely with our special operations forces. And right now, you know, if you look at a Green Beret, a Navy SEAL, a member of Delta Force that, you know, is at the 20, 25-year mark, they've got 20 years of combat. They've got 15 to 20 combat deployments, and they've experienced some pretty traumatic issues. Beyond that, I think more to the point you were making, it's also, you know, we're self-starters, we're self-reliant, and we play hurt.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, and so traditionally, you know, you kind of, there's a mentality we call, you know, you got to suck it up. So there's a difference between being hurt and injured. If you're hurt, you have to suck it up. If you're injured, you require medical attention.
Mm-hmm.
And too often, people confuse the two when it comes to mental health.
Ah.
You know what I mean? Because if you fracture your ankle and there's a bone sticking through, there's no discussion. You're injured. You need to be medevaced.
You're off the field, yeah.
But if you pull a muscle, you're hurt, and they expect you to keep moving, right?
Right.
Where there's no physical injury that's visible, people assume a mental health issue, you're just a little bit hurt, and you're not injured.
Right.
And so that goes on for a little bit, and when it doesn't get better, it does get worse. And the longer you deal with it without treating it or responding to it, the more problems you have. And so I think that's kind of at the center of it, because even if all the best leaders in the world want to do the right thing by the service members,
yeah,
we're sometimes our own worst enemy because we don't want to admit failure. We don't want to admit that we can't solve a problem that we're facing because, you know, by definition, especially when we get into our special operators, they get sent into no-fail situations routinely. And that's kind of our mantra, right? Never accept defeat. Failure is not an option. So on a personal side, when you're not able to cope with something, you're not able to overcome it, it feels like a failure, and nobody wants to admit defeat on that.
You know, back to care just a minute. One of the things at Homebase provides is at a thing called the Training Institute, is you work with caregivers and healthcare professionals on a lot of different areas in terms of treating those who have served, how to talk about military culture and training on PTSD and all of the things that we're talking about. So it seems as if Homebase is working to try to create more care or more options for care for those who struggle.
Yeah, we approach that two different ways. And so you've touched on it. So some of them are very intensive training programs that are certification, providing clinical capability and capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's obviously a very extensive process. And we've been working with clinicians in Massachusetts, in Florida. We're starting to work in Arizona to help build clinical capability where there's an absence of that. And that can take 6 months. But what we've also done is a lot of individual trainings to help with military culture, to help with pieces of the training and the clinical experience, help raise the level a bit. And we've provided training to more than 85,000 clinical providers.
Wow.
in a various different range of activities and therapies, just to give them a little bit of help. And you know, basically, you're familiar with the CEUs and the
course credits and
medical
whatnot.
Training that you've got to do each year. Mm-hmm. This goes towards that, and we don't charge, so it's kind of an enticement to come work on our stuff, so they're better prepared to treat veterans. Because otherwise, you've got to go pay to get your CEUs. We offer them at no cost, and we offer them in areas that we think there's a gap and needs attention.
Yeah. We should note the care that Homebase provides for veterans of all eras and service members and families, which is so important, and families of the fallen, regardless of era of service or status or geographical location. It's all provided free of charge, which is no small thing. That's really, really something amazing. Can you talk about serving families and working with families and their part to play when someone is struggling and how they're impacted when someone's struggling?
Yep. So you touched on it right at the get-go. So families are a central theme to all the care we provide, whether they are seeking care themselves or the veteran is seeking care, because we know it's kind of an ecosystem. If you only address part of the family, the injury has cascaded throughout the entire family.
Hmm.
Many of our veterans feel like they're suffering in silence, but their family knows they're not doing well, and their behaviors are impacting everybody. And the longer this goes on, the longer the impact takes place. So we have very specialized programs for military-connected children. We've got programs for spouses, parents, family members, couples. So we approach it from a range of areas. Then when we look, one of the things we looked at a few years ago was on our national programs, and this goes to the point that you mentioned, all of our programs are absolutely free to the veterans and military family members that need them. We have a two-week intensive clinical program that we've now operated for 7 years that flies 24 veterans in from across the country and anywhere in the world at no cost. So there's absolutely zero cost to it. It's the best clinical program in the country, bar none, and it's free.
Mm.
And so if you're a U.S. veteran and you feel like you've got PTSD, you need to call us and our folks will sort that with you. And we'll get you in the queue, but we assume all the costs for airfare, lodging, meals, and all the treatment. About 5 years ago, a national organization called Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors, which is an umbrella group for families of our fallen, they have a subset of families that are surviving members of suicide, not just losing their service member, they lost them to suicide.
Mm-hmm.
We created a very specialized program initially for the military spouses, primarily military wives, all too often either witnessed the suicide or walked in and found the remains.
Mm.
By far, some of the most injured people we treat at Homebase.
Mm-hmm.
And we designed a 14-day intensive clinical program for it, where we compress nearly 2 years of therapy into the 14-day period with dramatic results.
Wow.
And we've now been running that for about 5 years with great, great success.
KCBS's In-Depth will return after this break. David O'Leary is now joined by Wounded Warriors Dr. Aaron Fletcher and Tanya Oxendine, U.S. Army veteran.
The Wounded Warrior Project has, for 20 years, been working to serve those who served our country. How have things changed in that time? I guess I'd love to begin by how we talk about mental health and how we talk about suicide. Certainly in the last few years, that's changed, but over 20 years, it's come a long way. Tanya, can I ask you to begin?
Yeah, I think we've changed tremendously. It was more of a stigma and a taboo not to talk about mental health. Words that surrounding mental health were maybe not very nice words, like you're crazy or, you know, those type of things. And it has nothing to do with that. And I just think with Wounded Warrior Project, we have brought that to the forefront, that it's okay to talk about it, that it's okay to share it with your family, to share it with those who love you, to seek help. Is just so very important to prevent suicide and just struggling with mental health like I did for so many years, just suppressing all of that. It wasn't that I didn't know. It's just I just didn't feel comfortable saying it. I felt embarrassed. I felt shameful. I felt guilty. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we're talking about this and what you're doing, David, to bring this to the forefront, is just going to change lives and it's going to save lives.
Yeah. Would you say the same on the care side of things, Erin?
I would. I think that we absolutely have made a significant amount of progress in elevating the conversation about the mental health challenges that our, you know, active duty and our veteran service members face. I know that there's been significant changes and gains in the evidence-based treatment that we know works. So to Tanya's point, like when that individual is ready and they say, I need help, we have resources and we have treatment that works, which I think is an incredibly hopeful statement. So we know that access to care has improved. Still think there's some room for improvement there. And I think there's also room for improvement in continuing to elevate this conversation, to speak very candidly about it. And I think aspirationally, I'd love to see mental health challenges be talked about in the same way that high blood pressure or diabetes are talked about, particularly as it relates to the preventative measures that you can take with other physical conditions. I think a lot can be said the same for mental health challenges as well.
Mm. I wonder if we could back up just a little bit and talk about the veteran population, and it's self-evident, but I'm going to ask anyway, what are some of the reasons and contributing factors for that elevated risk for suicide among our veteran population?
Tanya, you want me to grab that one?
Yeah, please.
So I think veterans, when we think about individuals who are placed in continuously stressful situations, and that isn't just combat, that's training, that's deployments, being away from family, and, you know, not being able to address those instances right when they happen. You know, especially if you're out at training or you're on a deployment and you witness something traumatic, or you're noticing that your mood is lower and you're feeling more depressed and anxious, there's not an opportunity to talk about that in the moment. This is mission first. We need to stay safe and we need to be able to come home. And so we think about, again, that kind of longstanding continuous exposure to stress, anxiety, isolation from friends and family. We also know that some individuals that join the military are coming in with already kind of pre-existing mental health challenges that I think oftentimes get exacerbated by the conditions I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm. And I like to, if you don't mind, because Erin is correct. You know, military service is difficult, it's demanding, it's dangerous. You know, we have faced with challenges and we have sacrifices that we have to meet and things that we do. And over 200,000 service members transition from military each year. And what may be smooth for one may be a roller coaster for another. So, and I think, well, I know a lot of times we find it difficult to reach out and ask for help, like as Erin mentioned, because it is mission first to make sure our soldiers are safe, make sure our families are safe and doing all these things. So that's what we do. That's what we know that the military is to fight and win wars. And that's the mindset that we have. And I think when we transition, we're still in that mindset and not realizing that these things need to be talked about, that we need to develop new skills and discover new ways of learning and new ways of healing, and to realize that there is help out there and we don't have to keep that bottled in and struggle alone.
Yeah.
That, you know, Wounded Warrior Project is there. We have several services and programs, and they continue to change based on the needs of the warrior as well.
You know, I'm so glad you said that and spoke about that so eloquently, Tanya. You know, someone who hasn't served, I think everything I know about the military, I either saw on TV in the movies or, you know, have talked to loved ones who have served. I don't know. Right. I really have no idea. Can't fathom that. And I do get the sense that there is a sort of a culture of, if you know, you know. If you have served, you know. And I sometimes, you know, wonder if that can contribute to this idea of just get out there and do your job and we'll talk about it later mentality that maybe causes those who are struggling to suffer.
Yeah, it is.
I haven't said that very elegantly, but I think you know.
Right. No, you're exactly right. You know, I served in the 82nd Airborne Division, rapid deployment organization. You had to be ready at all times. We know that coming in the military. I swore to defend and protect this country and to protect this nation and our citizens. And that's where my head was. That's what I meant to do. And that's what I was going to do by any means necessary. Hmm. But then, you know, and as being a senior leader, you're just so involved in taking care of your soldiers, you kind of forget about yourself. Mm-hmm. And then when you transition, you're like, okay, there are no more soldiers. There's no more team, so to speak. What am I supposed to do with myself? And then all this stuff, like for me, after returning from Afghanistan in 2012, I mean, it just came down. Like now I'm getting like just my head is swelling up. It just came down like this huge rush, just everything all at once. And I'll never forget. I was at the Pentagon and I was looking out the window. I was stationed at the Pentagon after coming back from deployment, looking out the window. And I told my colleagues that I was going to go and take a drive. And I was going to drive my car off a bridge. And I knew I would die because I don't know how to swim. I had those suicidal thoughts. And thank goodness for my mental fortitude. I turned around. I ended up at Fort Belvoir, a hospital there at the mental health counter, and said I needed help and was recommended to Wounded Warrior Project. And I am so grateful, so thankful that I am thriving now and did not leave a legacy of suicide for my sons, because that's where I was headed.
Yeah. Well, we're grateful too.
Yeah.
Aaron, to your point about mental health and talking about it and dealing with it the same way we talk about and deal with our physical health, can you talk about some of the programs that are available and some of the ways that the Wounded Warrior Project works with veterans to do just that?
Yeah, absolutely. So Wounded Warrior Project is really designed to support the whole person and their family. And so we have programs designed to address one's physical health and wellness, one's mental health and wellness, their financial health and wellness, and then their, how we would phrase it, their social wellness, their community. Mm-hmm. And so we also know that individuals can come to Wounded Warrior Project through those different doors. You know, as Tani said, even though you know you're struggling with some mental health challenges, that might not be the mental health door might not be the door that you walk into first.
Right.
And that's fine. We're just happy you're walking through the door. And then these programs are designed to kind of all work together, again, to provide this comprehensive and individualized approach to getting our veterans and their families what they need. Mm-hmm. So I think specifically about our mental health programs, we've structured it in a continuum of sorts, where we have kind of the lowest end of intensity, as it were, with our Wounded Warrior Project Talk program. That's a weekly phone call that the veteran has with the same kind of talk specialist every week for 20 minutes. They're working on accountability and a goal. This is a great foray for individuals that are not ready for structured outpatient therapy yet. Mm-hmm. It's a great way to get some perspective, you know, again, that accountability piece. Then we have relationships with mental health providers in the community where we can connect veterans and or their family members to traditional clinical outpatient therapy. We have the Warrior Care Network program that I am so fortunate to oversee. And that is our exceptional 2-week accelerated program for depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress, military sexual trauma, using world-class treatment, partnering with one of our 4 partners across the country, delivering this care. And then we have kind of our complex care team that uses resources within the VA and really provides that advocacy for more intensive levels of care. And it should be noted that none of these programs and services come at any cost to the warrior or their family. Mm. This is no cost to them. We bring them in, we guide them through, and we match them with what's going to meet their needs in that moment.
Where do the veterans that you serve live? Where is your community of care? Is it nationwide? Certain
nationwide. Mm-hmm. So these are, you know, it's a national coverage. We have our kind of connection events and our physical health and wellness events have kind of a local component to it, mm-hmm. for the face-to-face events so that you can really build that sense of community. We have virtual programming that brings kind of everybody together.
Sure.
Warrior Care Network specifically, national, with 4 of our partners. And we fly you in for the program that's going to best suit your needs.
Nice. Tanya, talk about, in the few minutes we have left, you know, how important is it as someone who's owned your own struggles, mm-hmm. and we're so glad you're well and so grateful for your willingness to talk about it. Because when we talk about it, we normalize this kind of conversation.
Right.
Talk about how important it is to know that there are others who understand what you're going through, that you're not alone in this fight.
Yeah, I would just tell all my fellow veterans that they are not alone in this fight. You know, before Wounded Warrior Project, as we mentioned, I was struggling. I mean, deep, just struggling. And it was for 9 years, 9 whole years, I struggled with my mental health. And now I tell you, I live a wonderful life. I do. And it's because Wounded Warrior Project has helped me on that journey to better mental health and has shifted my outlook on life. Mm. You know, there is no way that I could fail. Not with so many people trying to put me back together. Yeah. You know, I'm fully operational now and I'm on this amazing path and I get to, you know, go out and be a spokesperson for Wounded Warrior Project. And I travel the world advocating for mental health, physical health, military sexual trauma, you know, bringing awareness to what we do for our warriors. We are here to help. We will help and we can help.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wish you nothing but continued success in what you're doing and continued good health. I think you got that triathlon in you, as we talked a little bit before we got started, but you're a real force of nature. Tanya Oxendine, who served in the U.S. Army for 30 years, reaching the rank of Command Sergeant Major, and also Aaron Fletcher, who serves as a Director of Warrior Care Network for the Wounded Warrior Project.
I'd like to tell you how everyone can get in contact with us.
Ask. Please do.
Yes. At woundedwarriorproject.org.
That's great. WoundedWarriorProject.org. I'm on it right now. And whether you're looking and finding out more about mental wellness, physical wellness, just getting connected with others, all of it right there at WoundedWarriorProject.org to find out just a little bit more. Thanks for all you do. And thanks for being with us on Odyssey's I'm Listening.
Thank you, David.
Thank you for having us.
This is Odyssey's I'm Listening. And if you're struggling, remember you can always dial 988, the Suicide Prevention Lifeline. The Lifeline is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And the number again is 988. It's okay to not be okay. We know the power of talk can save lives. Odyssey's I'm Listening aims to share valuable resources for those who need to connect, heal, and share their own stories. You can find out more about the Wounded Warrior Project at woundedwarriorproject.org. And you can find out more about Odyssey's I'm Listening initiative at imlistening.org or by using the Odyssey app. I'm David O'Leary. This is I'm Listening from Odyssey.
You can hear in-depth episodes on the Odyssey app. Download the app on your smartphone and favorite KCBS radio. Thanks for listening. For KCBS and In-Depth, I'm Mary Hughes.
You've been listening to KCBS In-Depth. Get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Visit kcbsradio.com for more news and interviews. We are the Bay Area's news station, KCBS.